Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, double parsha of Tazria Metzara. This week, welcome back from the Pesach break. Hope that you had a great Pesach. And now that we're in April, with May fast approaching, now's a great time to be thinking about some major upcoming programs at Pardes. First is Tikkun Leil Shavuot. If you are in Jerusalem for Shavuot, then please come by and spend the night with us. Program starts at 11:30 p.m. and all the details are on the Pardes website under events. Also, now is the right time to be finalizing your summer plans at Pardes. We've got a series of programs, the Executive Learning Seminar, and also two summer sessions. Any one of these would be a fantastic opportunity for you to experience learning at Pardes in person in Jerusalem, something you owe yourself to do. Bring a friend, sign up now. All the details are on the Pardes website under programs. And now Rabbi Meir Schweiger will present his drash on Tazria Metzara. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week, we have a double portion, Parshiot Tazria and Metzora. Today, I would like to deviate from what I generally do, which is a close reading of the text. And instead, I would like to use our two Parshiot as a springboard to deal with a much larger issue. And that is making relevant something which seems totally outdated. As some of you may know, I have been teaching at the Pardes Institute for the past 40 years. For many, many years, I have been teaching Bible, specifically the books of Bereishit and Shmot. And in fact, we have a curriculum which alternates, where one year the whole school is learning the stories of Bereishit, and another year we do the stories of Shmot. And there is a logic to it. The stories of these two books are fascinating, are exciting. They keep you in suspense. Not only that, but they deal with the basic existential questions of human existence, basic issues of the human situation, love and hate, jealousy and desire, stealing, killing, power and exploitation, sin and punishment, prosperity and destruction. Occasionally, I have taught other sections that deal with the legal part of the Bible. In particular, the Parsha of Mishpatim, the Parsha of Kedoshim, both of which focus on a whole array of interpersonal relations. And although these sections are legal and are not as exciting as the story parts, yet nevertheless, one can easily see how they can be relevant to our day-to-day lives. But then you come to the book of Leviticus, where a major part of the book of Leviticus focuses on sacrifices, on laws of ritual purity and impurity, on the tabernacle slash temple. And within the book of Leviticus, we have our two parshiot, Tazria and Metzora. A major part of the two parshiot are laws regarding tzara'at, which generally is mistranslated as leprosy. And in fact, in previous podcasts, we have discussed this at length. There's leprosy of the person, of one's body. There is leprosy of one's clothing. There is tzarat of one's home. And for the modern reader, for the modern listener in the Beit Knesset, perhaps these are the two parshiyot, where one basically tunes out. Both because we are dealing with a subject which seems to be so esoteric, so removed from our reality, on the one hand. And on the other hand, we go into such great detail in all of these different types of manifestations of tzaraat that even someone like myself finds it very, very hard to get excited about it. I would like to now mention a Bible scholar who I don't think I've mentioned in the past, but who, in my opinion, has written the most comprehensive work on the book of Leviticus, Rabbi Professor Jacob Milgram. Professor Milgram was the chairman of the Department of Near Eastern Studies at the University of California in Berkeley for many, many years in the last century. When he retired, he made Aliyah to Israel, teaching at the Hebrew University, and he passed away only 7 years ago. Perhaps his magnum opus is a translation in commentary on the book of Leviticus, which is part of the Anchor Bible series. He wrote another book, which I would call a Reader's Digest, a kind of abridged version of his magnum opus, which is called Leviticus, a book of ritual and ethics, a continental commentary. And I would like to now read the opening paragraphs of his introduction. Values are what Leviticus is all about. They pervade every chapter and almost every verse. Many may be surprised to read this, since the dominant view of Leviticus is that it consists only of rituals, such as sacrifices and impurities. This, too, is true. Leviticus does discuss rituals. However, underlying the rituals, the careful reader will find an intricate web of values that purports to model how we should relate to God and to one another. Anthropology has taught us that when a society wishes to express and preserve its basic values, it ensconces them in rituals. How logical! Words fall from our lips like the dead leaves of autumn, but rituals endure with repetition. They are visual and participatory. They embed themselves in memory at a young age, reinforced with each enactment. To be sure, when rituals fail to concretize our theological commitment, they become physical oddities, superstitions, or small idolatries. Ritual is the poetry of religion that leads us to a moment of transcendence. When a ritual fails because it either lacks content or is misleading, it loses its efficacy and its purpose. A ritual must signify something beyond itself, whose attainment enhances the meaning and value of life. This, I submit, is the quintessence, an achievement of Leviticus. I find these paragraphs to be a very, very powerful statement. And what Professor Milgram is saying is that perhaps all too often, we trivialize rituals. In some cases, we may do away with them because we feel that they are obsolete. In other cases, we may continue to do them without realizing that the ritual is not the end, but that the ritual is pointing us, is expressing, is embodying higher values, which ultimately are at the core of our existence. It is through the rituals that cultures succeed in transmitting the deepest beliefs and values of their society. For us as Jews, probably the best expression of what Professor Milgram is saying is what we have just experienced, the Passover Seder. At the core of the Seder are rituals. We have 4 cups of wine. We eat the matzah. We eat the maror, the bitter herbs. During the time of the temple, the centerpiece was the eating of the paschal lamb, the Korban Pesach. It is through these rituals, which we do year in, year out, that we somehow express both to ourselves, to our children, what it means to be a free people. And in particular, for us as Jews, why God took us out of slavery to freedom. Ultimately, what is it that God expects of us? I should add that perhaps the success of these rituals is because they are also accompanied by a story, by a telling of the story, by study, which helps us to internalize what we are doing. As we actually say at the Seder, based on a Mishnah in Tractate Psachim, in every generation one is obligated to see himself or herself as if they have gone to Egypt. Because the purpose of the ritual is to have us relive the moment of the Exodus, to have us experience what it is to be a free person. And therefore, if I now take this to our parshiyot, for us, we do not have the ritual today of tzara'at. But what we do have is the ability to analyze that ritual, to study that ritual, to apply that ritual to our day-to-day life. And to me, that is the challenge, the educational challenge of studying these sections and of teaching these sections as a way of saying, don't just look at things that immediately speak to you, but perhaps take those sections that seem to be so remote, so removed, engage them. Use them to challenge us and take us to another level. And now I want to just end by looking at 2 stories. And this is what we would call intertextual study. 2 stories of tzara'at, which can begin to give us some type of understanding of what's going on in the laws of our parsha. The first is in the book of Numbers, chapter 12, a very famous story where Miriam and Aaron are speaking about Moshe regarding the Cushite woman that he took. The one statement which the text actually tells us they said is, did God speak only with Moses? Did God not also speak with us? And very interestingly, When God then comes and reprimands them, God says, how could you possibly compare yourself to Moses? When God speaks to Moses, it is mouth to mouth. It is face to face, without riddles. That's not the way God speaks to other prophets. How could you not be afraid of speaking against my servant Moses? Now, it is not clear what exactly were they saying, but by looking at how God presents it, it seems to be that whatever they said, they miscalculated who Moses is. In effect, by making the comparison between them and Moses, they were demeaning Moses, and in effect, demeaning God. And in the aftermath of what God said, it says God was angry at them. God went. The cloud departed. And this is chapter 12, verse 10. And it says, and behold, Miriam, who's mitzorat kashalek, was leprous as snow. And from that section, it seems that the tzara'at was an expression of God's anger. The tzara'at was an expression of God's abandonment. And that, in fact, is articulated a few verses later when Aaron says to Moses, "Al not tehi kamet, let Miriam not be as one who is dead." Being white as snow is the color of a cadaver, of a dead person. It's as if what God said to Miriam, I am abandoning you. I am your life force. By abandoning you, you have the color of the dead. And as I have mentioned in a previous podcast, the rabbis see this story in terms of the ethical value which it's trying to get across. And that is, do not say Lashon Hara. Do not badmouth anyone. Be careful what you say about somebody else, which is one of the ethical values which the rabbis see somehow expressed in this phenomenon of tzara'at. If you want to be alive, if you want to have vitality, recognize the vitality of someone else. Don't do what we would call today character assassination. Now let me look at a second story. And that is in the book of Kings 2, chapter 5. We're told of a certain individual whose name is Naaman. Naaman, who is the general of the king of Aram. And in fact, Naaman is described in the opening verse as being Ish Gadol, a big man before his master, someone who has clearly favor in the court, someone who is a man of valor, Gibor Chayil, because he was instrumental in the defeat of the Jewish people. And then we're told he's a Metzora, he's leprous. And then, perhaps in contrast to this notable warrior, man of the court, he has a young, in fact the word is small, maiden, who is the maid of his wife. And the young girl says to the mistress, petition your master, petition, she should petition her husband, that he should go to the prophet in Samaria, who will help him to be cured of his tzara'at. And what ends up happening is, he does go to Elisha the prophet. And interesting enough, when he comes to Elisha, he has an authorization from his king. And he comes with horses and chariots. And he's at the entrance to Elisha's house. And interestingly, You would have imagined such a significant personality who's come that Elisha would immediately go out to greet him and welcome him. And instead, what does Elisha do? Elisha sends a messenger who tells him, go bathe yourself 7 times in the Jordan River and your flesh will be healed and it will be purified. And when Naaman hears this, he is fuming. Why is he fuming? Well, the first thing which I would like to suggest is that he's come all this way. Why doesn't Elisha himself go out to greet him? Why does he just send a messenger? But then when we look at the text itself, it says, you want me to go to the Jordan and to purify myself? That's not what I expected would happen. I expected that Elisha the prophet would come and then say, call out in the name of his God, or to put it in different language, say abracadabra. And then, just like that, I would be healed. And then he says, you know what? And if you're telling me to go and find some sort of water with minerals that has healing capabilities, but we have much better rivers in Damascus compared to anything in Israel. And he is ready, Naaman, to just go back. And his servants convince him. What have you got to lose? Just try it. And when he tries it, lo and behold, he is actually healed. And interestingly enough, the rabbis in a midrash say that why was Naaman afflicted with tzara'at? Because of his hubris, which seems to ooze out in all the verses that I read. The opening line tells us in many different ways what an unbelievable person this is. General, warrior, statesman. When he comes to Elisha, he comes with horses and chariots with a very impressive entourage. And Elisha consciously does not go out to greet him. Elisha consciously tells him the way to be healed, a little bit of humility, tone it down. And perhaps that's the most significant lesson which he learns from that experience. And that is why Elisha doesn't remove the tzara'at. If he wants it removed, he has to go to the Jordan. He has to be prepared to bathe himself 7 times in these very unimpressive waters. So that in this story, the value that we learn from tzara'at is the need for humility. And I would even add, the greater the individual, the greater the need for humility. In previous podcasts, I have discussed a number of other ideas related to tzara'at. But my point today was that it is very important, educationally, to study those parts of the Torah, to study those parts of the larger Bible, which don't immediately speak to us. But if we actually begin to look into them in greater depth, we can perhaps discover that from those sections which seem to be so removed, so different from the reality which we experience today, it is those sections that perhaps can teach us what Judaism is all about. I'd even say what our purpose is in this world, the very core of our existence. And therefore, I encourage all of you, when you study, don't skip the book of Leviticus. Don't tune out when they read these sections in the synagogue. On the contrary, seek out those commentaries, those scholars. Seek out those tools of analysis that can help you see that there is, in fact, a deeper meaning to what you're reading a deeper meaning which may actually get to the core of what Judaism is all about. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.